Welcome back. Get ready for a new time. I've seen a new time. This is with G-Man 98 on the FM band and with digital as well. So we're what we call digital audio broadcaster. And you know the show is Big Man Talk with me, Brother Mado. And today we are definitely talking because, you know, sometimes I do the show on my own. And, you know, sometimes you hear your own voice too often and it gets a bit painful. So today we have a different flow. One of the things I did say to people is that I'm going to be doing a different kind of show. My show now is not just about me coming here and doing my little rants and doing my little perspectives. And you know, my perspectives I share with you are sometimes not the perspectives of even the radio. It's definitely not the perspective of anyone else. I give a perspective, you might disagree with it. And therefore, you have the right to give your own. And I've provided a platform for people to be able to do that. Equally, I try to say I never interview people unless I plan an interview with people. What I do is have a conversation with people. And the conversation then might lead to me asking questions based on that conversation, which is slightly different from an interview. I've also, if you say something that gives me the opportunity to ask a question, that's exactly what I do. And I think there's an element of accountability from people who have responsibility. So I want to give them the opportunity to talk about accountability. And sometimes that's what we do. Now, today is a sort of like historic. This is an historic day in the context of the show. Because my guest now is somebody who will introduce himself in a minute and he'll talk about the organization he represents and they will have a conversation. And the reason why it's different is because it's never normally the case that we get the opportunity to have conversations with some people. Some people might be out of reach. Some people might not be able to be accessible. And certainly from my perspective, when we started to talk about the organization, then, you know, there was a time when people like me would never think that there was a possibility to engage in a dialogue like this. So that's one aspect of it. And then equally, if you develop a perception of something and you have been conditioned to have a mindset about it, you might not even want to talk. That's the other thing to talk about. So good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Good afternoon, Madhu. I'm fine, thank you.
All right. So can you just say who you are? Introduce yourself and tell us who you are.
So my name's Michael Bothamley, yeah. And I lead the Society of Merchant Venturers here in Bristol. And the Society of Merchant Venturers is a social purpose organisation. Mm-hmm. Its mission is to help communities across Bristol thrive, to combat disadvantage, to remove obstacles to opportunity. And that's what we do in the 21st century.
Right.
But we've been around for 500 years.
Ooh.
And we used to be a trade association. Right. And we used to run the Port of Bristol. Mm-hmm. Indeed, back in the day, 16th, 17th, 18th centuries, we and the corporation, the historic society and Bristol Corporation, pretty well ran the city.
Yes.
So we have some history.
Okay.
And it's in part a problematic history, and that's what we're dealing with today.
All right. Well, there's a few things you've said which would have been interpreted in a different way to me, and the language might be different for me. So, for example, you talked about a social purpose organization. What does that mean?
Well, that means doing philanthropic, yeah, and charitable things,
yeah,
to achieve social impact.
Right.
It's voluntary. And in our case, it's work across Greater Bristol in education, in the care of older people, right, in social enterprise, and in charitable giving.
Right. So, and I suspect, and you mentioned in the 21st century, because from where I'm sitting, if you ask me to define you, I wouldn't say nothing like that. I would just know that I would probably say the merchant ventures own the city, right? They own it because they had a role to play in the enslavement of Africans, which brought enormous wealth to the city. So that's the only thing I'd see. I would never see what you do now. I'd see what you do then. Is there a difference? Absolutely. And therefore, can you talk a bit about the bit before?
Certainly. Mm-hmm. Certainly. So we were a trade association.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Back in
I'm asking this because people talk about the slave trade, which some of us don't talk about.
Okay. Well, I'm going back before the slave trade began. So back in the 1500s, right. There were a variety of organizations, guilds, trade associations, livery companies and the like, who represented different trades.
Right.
And my society, for all those hundreds of years ago, represented at least some of the people who owned ships that trafficked goods in and out of the city. And in the early, in the late 17th century, the society lobbied to bring a change in the law about, to bring the slave trade to Bristol.
Mm.
And then throughout the 18th century and the early part of the 19th century, Bristol played a huge part in the transatlantic trafficking of enslaved Africans.
Which is exactly the term I wanted you to use, because it is said in that way. So, right. So, Michael is saying that there was a time when his organization played an integral part in that.
That's right. And the role was, we lobbied to change the law so that Bristol could lawfully take part in the Atlantic trade.
Right.
And members of the society both invested and managed voyages right. which trafficked enslaved Africans.
Right. Yes.
And a small number of members of the Historic Society also owned enslaved people and were compensated at the time that abolition in 1834.
Mm-hmm.
We had some active abolitionists in the society in those days as well.
Mm.
But it's fair to say that the people who were individually involved in the Atlantic trade probably outnumbered the abolitionists.
Right. You use the word you legally applied to get involved with the trade. Explain what does that mean?
So,
because it, you know, you tell me what that means.
So back in the 17th century,
yeah.
The Royal Africa Company
right.
had a legal monopoly based in London to participate in all aspects of African trade.
Yeah.
And the city of Bristol and its merchant community thought that that was a bad thing and felt that it should be opened up to Bristol. And so they lobbied to change the law. So yeah. That's why I say that from 1697, I think, it became legal
right.
for Bristol merchants to participate right. in that awful trade.
So prior to that, people were doing it anyway. So Bristol jumped in. That's the language I'm using.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Bristol right. jumped in. It was London's trade and right. then Bristol jumped
so
in.
So the merchant ventures is a Bristol thing, is it?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So it's not a UK thing.
No. Up and down the country, there are ancient guilds and livery companies and organizations like ours, which still survive. They were mainly founded between the 1300s and the 1500s. And to the extent that they survive now, they've all become repurposed as social purpose organizations, running charities and doing philanthropic stuff.
So I'm trying to use my language, you know. So the society became one of the many people that became party to this trade, and it's a Bristol-based organization.
Absolutely.
So it would be reasonable to say some of the wealth that the city got as a result of what your society did is came through that means, is it?
Yes, that's absolutely right. Mm. They call it Bristol's golden age, don't they? The 17th and 18th century,
yes.
where Bristol was vastly enriched
right.
by participating in the Atlantic economy.
Okay.
And the Atlantic economy was in large part based on slavery.
All right. The organization itself, is it, what would I describe? Is it a closed society? You know what I call it, enclosed society? Is it an exclusive club for exclusive people?
No, it certainly isn't either of those things anymore.
All right. Anymore is a key word there. Yes.
Once upon a time, it might have been exclusive. It's very inclusive now, as you'll see if you visit our website and have a look at who our members are.
Right.
It is technically a private organisation. It's actually created by Royal Charter. We got a Royal Charter in 1552 from King Edward VI, who was the short-lived son of King Henry VIII.
Right. Well, you see, this is where language is different for me, because you say it's technically a private organization. From where I sit, there's nothing technical about that. It still seems to be that way to me. It still would be the kind of organization that, you know, only certain people can become part of or would want to become part of. So that doesn't make it technical. It makes it a private society.
Well, it's a private organization, both technically and practically.
Yes.
It's a members organization.
Yes.
The people who want to become members are people who have been successful in business and wish to give back.
All right.
So it's largely made up of people who use their money and their skills voluntarily to support good causes across Bristol, particularly in education, the care of older people. We used to own Clifton Downs. We gave them to the city of Bristol in perpetuity back in 1861, and we helped to manage that. And we do a lot of charitable giving, and we support social enterprise.
All right. I'm trying to work out in my own head, how are you different now to then? I'm trying to, because if I have a perception of you, unless I see something different, it's difficult to understand how you have changed from where I sit. So what you're telling me is not something I would see.
Okay. Let me try and explain this. So once upon a time, we were a trade association.
Right.
Now we're a social purpose organisation.
Right.
The hinge moment is back in 1861, where we gave the Downs to the people of Bristol and where we gave up managing the port, which we had previously done for the best part of 300 years. From then on, increasingly our work has been voluntary, philanthropic, charitable, running schools, looking after older people in our city, all in our city, Greater Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
And in recent times, we have felt that there was a big lack of transparency over this particular part of our history, which we needed to address. And there were two reasons for that. The first was that the descendants of enslaved people sometimes came to our building and wanted to have questions answered about what the society, the historic society, had done during that terrible period. And we didn't know all the answers, and that just wasn't good enough.
Mm.
And secondly, the fact of that history has been the elephant in the room that's got in the way of our ability to engage with certain communities across Bristol. And so we commissioned this independent academic report several years ago, and we're launching it today. We got the final version yesterday. We're launching it today. The absolutely key thing about it is that we've had a draft for a couple of months, and we've been discussing it with our friends across Bristol, community organisations, particularly the leaders of Black Bristol and the descendants of enslaved Africans. We've been asked to join the Bristol Legacy Foundation as partners.
Mm.
We've been welcomed into this conversation with extraordinary grace and generosity by all of those people. And the principal thing, apart from acknowledging and apologising for our history, our role in that, is that, all being well, this enables us to have a reset moment where we don't want to move on, but we can move forward. And we move forward working collaboratively with the Bristol Legacy Foundations and organisations and people like you and Jendai to co-create initiatives for repair. You and I offline have had interesting conversations about what reparations means and what it needs to look like. Above all, it means acknowledging the damage, understanding the damage, not just the original loss, and not just day-to-day racism, but actually the inherited damage that young descendants of enslaved African people in our city suffer today. Mm-hmm. That sense of bereavement, loss of identity. And repair means working together to start to think about ways of how to fix that, mm-hmm. how to make things better for the next generation.
Right. I am aware that there's a report that you've produced, 33 pages of it, which I'm not going to go into too much in today, because I think that is for a bigger... That report is coming out today. What I was wanting to ask you a bit more about, it talks about in your letter, the letter you wrote, it mentions that while society didn't own plantation and enslaved Africa, it was instrumental in launching Bristol's legal involvement, which is what you have said. And it says the society benefited from Bristol's trade. The benefits that you got, do you still have them? Do you still have those benefits? Or would you say they're not there anymore? Because from where I sit, the benefits are still there. I mean, technically, the city has benefited, and perhaps part of what you did is the contributor to the benefits that still exist. Is there something that you intend to do about that, your organization?
So the cash benefits don't exist, because, of course, what the report talks about is the revenues that the society received in duties for running the port. Mm-hmm. But equally, running the port had costs. So we have to look at both sides of the profit and loss account. And actually, the society back in the 18th and early 19th century did not make huge profits. Mm. It had big revenues and it had big expenses. Mm. But on the broader point, you're absolutely right. The whole city of Bristol benefited massively from this Atlantic economy and the trade in...
Including your association, including the merchants.
Individual merchants and lots of other individual citizens of Bristol and indeed the whole city of Bristol became... rich, became the second city in the land in the 18th century. They talk about it as Bristol's golden age, but it was Bristol's darkest hour as well, because it was built off the profits of the Atlantic economy, which was in part built on slavery.
Yeah, it's difficult for me not to still think that you're still rich, though. I'm not just talking about money rich, I'm talking about powerful rich, because from some people would argue that you still own the city, technically. because you own lots of things that will never not be yours as an organization. That's what I'm alluding to.
Well, apart from our building, we don't own anything anymore.
Oh.
Technically, we own the subsoil of Clifton Down, but we gave that to the people of Bristol in perpetuity 160 years ago. We do administer large charitable funds because we're a perpetual organization. Over the centuries, people have created charitable trusts and appointed us to be the trustee, because it's convenient to have a perpetual organization as a trustee. We have certain charitable funds of our own, which we disperse year in, year out. What we particularly have is a commitment to make this a better place, and lots of time and talent and energy and some money. And the conversation, Madhu, that we're having with black community leadership organizations at the moment, it is about co-creating something that we're calling Repair Through Service, which is going to be a multi-generational commitment. I'm reminded all the time that co-creation is the most important part of this journey for us. As Jendai has told me, I must stop thinking like a white person, and I must do nothing about you without you. So this is all about co-creation and acknowledging our history and responding to it in an appropriate way, using the resources that we have.
What is your specific role in the society? What is your role? That's what I wanted to understand.
Okay, so each year a new leader is appointed. I came into office on November the 10th last year. I serve until November the 10th this year, and then
it's an annual change.
Absolutely. But the corporate body continues and is capable of continuing to deliver initiatives in a very consistent way.
Yes.
It's not. This is absolutely not about me. This is about the organisation, the collective, the corporate, the collective.
But still, the leadership has to be influential in what you do. So, you know, what you're doing now has never been done before. Why now?
Well, it's probably fair to say that the statue coming down spurred us on.
Okay.
So, thank you. And I think we all agree that was a very good thing. And certainly that encouraged us to commission this report because we were, at that time, asked questions about our history that we just weren't able to answer.
What's the connection between your organ and the statue? What's that connection? Was he a merchant venture?
He was a merchant venturer, and we believe he came to two meetings. We certainly had nothing to do with the statue. That was put up in the late 19th century by a different individual who I don't believe was a merchant. I think there was a general fundraising effort across the city to raise £1,000 or something, which was the cost. I think... you know, money was raised across the city. I don't believe. Well, I'm sure. I know we didn't fund it.
Okay. All right. It talks in your letter about the voyages and the transporting of people, and the numbers of people who died. That is not going to be easy to deal with, is it? That might not enable somebody like me, as an African, to believe that there's going to be genuineness in terms of that any change that you might want to bring about, if I read that. And that's your letter, isn't it? The bit I'm reading.
Yeah, it's my letter, and I'm quoting from the history report.
Right.
What we know is that something approaching 500,000 enslaved Africans were trafficked on ships that left Bristol over the period of the trade, and about half of those individuals were trafficked in voyages in which individual members of my society, 200 years plus ago, invested in or managed. It's an utterly appalling story, and of course it's even more appalling for somebody who is a descendant of an enslaved African, and I can only repeat what I said earlier about the extraordinary generosity and grace of your community in welcoming us to participate in this conversation. I think it's extraordinary.
Well, conversations have to happen, and I suppose, you know, it is a step, a small one, but it's very difficult. In not, because as I said, some of the things that you might think is understood, even with the best written stuff and all this, is never going to be fully understood. There is always going to be this feeling that the change always happens because of something, and then it goes back to normality, because in somewhere before, there must have been an attempt to do what you're now doing in your tenure. What happens when your tenure finishes? Is there going to be some of the things that you want to do now not happening because you're no longer at the helm? Which is why I asked you, what is your specific role and how long that is? Because we see how that works. So you might have a conviction to doing what you're doing now. What is telling me that once you leave office, this is going to continue?
Well, the first thing to say, Madhu, is that this report was commissioned more than 3 years ago.
Right.
By one of my predecessors.
Yes.
And always with the commitment that it would be published in full, unedited. So to that degree, it's actually coincidental that it's me
who has to pick up the pieces,
who has to preside over this particular event.
Right.
The first step in any journey is the hardest, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think actually this is the very first step, but it's one of the early steps. We're committing to a long-term, open-hearted, wholehearted set of initiatives which will involve us using our charitable cash, our skills and our expertise to co-create with Black Bristol community organisations works of repair, services of repair, which will be multi-generational. Mm. I believe that we will follow through, but and I hope you know enough about me and about us to know that that's right, but the proof will be in the pudding, won't it? In the eating.
Let me just take a quick break. We will come back shortly.
Here are the ingredients a little new school.
But the only fine girl, only fine girl, only fine girl, only fine girl.
And the heritage roll, Shine. Yo.
Right, welcome back. I'm having a conversation with Michael. Michael is the, what's your title? Master, is it?
Yep.
Yeah, Grandmaster, they said. There's no grand on it. It's the master of the Society of Merchant Venturers, who most people who sit in my seat, being me, would say is an organization that was instrumental in the enslavement and trafficking of African descendants, of which I am a descendant. So my ancestors would have been some of the people who would have suffered tremendously as a result of the merchant ventures. That's the language I'm using. And therefore, somebody might say, so why are you having a conversation with Michael? Because that's what I do. I have conversations. This conversation with Michael is about giving him an opportunity to tell you, without me trying to tell you, about the society. And equally, it's to also, and this is just the start of many, many conversations, I suppose, and many things that will come about. There's a report that they have now produced. He did say in the conversation that it has been 3 years in the making. I said in the break, well, we have been making it for you for years. It's not everything that we might learn from it is the things that we have been saying. Now, sometimes the hard bit is when we've been saying these things for years, and then suddenly you might say it now, Michael, and it becomes, oh, but we were saying this all along. So now that you want to say it in your way, the report you have produced, can you talk a bit about the report itself? What is in it? And what, as a result of it, are you expecting as a result of the report that you've produced as a society? That's what.
So the first thing to say is I completely agree that the history that you know and that you've been talking about all these years mm-hmm. is, it, you know, your view of it is broadly correct. Mm-hmm. What we felt as the modern Society of Merchant Venturers is that we needed to have something that was really authoritative mm. and that had real legitimacy mm. And academic rigor and credentials. Mm. And so to have one of the leading academics in this field from one of the leading universities write a very thorough report based on a considerable amount of research, including a lot of really new research, mm. the investigation of lots of new data. We thought that was really important. Mm. And I said to you earlier on that that's important for two reasons. Firstly, so that we can tell absolutely the full story mm. to the descendants of enslaved Africans who ask us. And it just wouldn't have been good enough. It wasn't good enough that we couldn't say that. Mm. But secondly, we have to have something of that legitimacy to enable us to move forward in our conversations with people like you and Gendai and the organisations that you lead and other organisations which represent the black communities in Bristol and the descendants of enslaved Africans. Because if our position is that we acknowledge this history mm. and the right response to it mm. is to support the Legacy Foundation and its memorialization project and its storytelling project and its forward-looking celebrations of resilience and survival. Mm. And also, it's about looking forward and making this city a better place and a more joined up place, a reimagined place, mm-hmm. for your children, grandchildren, and their children and grandchildren.
Are you hoping that as a result of whatever you do, you become sort of embraced and forgiven? That's the sort of words I'm using.
No.
If there is no forgiveness, is that part and parcel of this? Let's just admit that we did this, and then from that, we might be seen in a better light. Is that part and parcel of all of this?
Well, it's certainly the case that this lack of transparency, or perceived lack of transparency, was the elephant in the room that stopped good conversations happening, or got in the way of good conversations being better conversations. But no, I don't look for embracing or forgiving. We just want to authentically move forward in partnership with restorative work. One of the UN principles of reparation is this notion of rehabilitation, and a definition of that is repairing fractured relationships and fractured communities. As a social purpose organisation in Greater Bristol, why wouldn't we want to try to achieve that?
Right. So you want to be repaired as an organisation, and not repairing people. Is that the way you're looking at this?
You've told me, I think, on another occasion, that repair is an internal thing and an external thing. So yes, both of those.
Yes. How easy or how difficult it is for you to be having these conversations as an organization?
It's surprisingly easy.
Oh.
For us.
In what context?
Because the people we're talking to have made it easy for us.
Right.
They have been, I've said this before, gracious, generous, open-hearted.
Right.
It's much harder for the people with whom we're having the conversations, I think, than it is for us. This isn't about us. The least we can do is try to engage in these conversations. It's up to the other half of the conversation as to whether or not they engage and how they engage. But I have to say that on the strength of my experience over the last couple of months, it's going to be a good conversation. I think it's a really important conversation. I think it's going to have a really good outcome.
And what do you want as an outcome, as an organisation? What do you think would be a good outcome?
A good outcome will be the willingness of all grassroots communities across Bristol to engage with us, and for that, for the relationships to be full and trusting.
Okay. Right. That is, I believe, the start of a convo, right? And as I said, today was about you coming here to talk about the organization briefly, because that's just what, and to mention that this report is now available, and the embargo has been lifted now.
The embargo is lifted, and
an hour and 13 minutes ago.
Absolutely.
Yes, 12 o'clock.
And if you go to the Society of Merchant Venturers website, you should be able to find it.
Right. So I would encourage people to find it and read it, because if part of reading it means that Michael and his organization then might need to have conversations with others, then that's exactly what will happen. There is an opportunity for people to have a say on what you've written. And it might not be the case that everything that's there might be agreed with and all of that. So it's a perspective that might not be the same for everyone. So that's where I want to end it for today, Michael, because I know the conversations will continue. That I'm very sure of. But I felt it was useful to have you in today, just to have the brief start to the conversation, because me having a one-to-one with you, I think it was necessary to use this forum as a way of saying this report is out, and the people who have commissioned it are the ones who will need to talk to it and about it and all of that. So if there's an opportunity to this forum for that to be a starting point for that conversation, that's what today was about. So
thank you very much, okay, Madhu, and so, thank you for the opportunity.
All right, so we will... This, trust me, this is not going to be the end of the conversation by any means. And I'm very much mindful that it is very likely that there will be a much fuller discussion about the report itself on GLOCAL. So we will watch that space, okay? All right, so let me just take another break and then we will come back.
No people come to Jamaica, no know how we live things, say everything nice too, if we love